Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of my Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
Doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Today on the show, we have no news. There's tons of news going on, but we don't have any today. But we do have two guests for us today. First up, we have Representative Chris Harris, who is a representative from Eastern Kentucky, as far east as you can get. Eastern Pike County, east of Pikeville, up into Martin County. He is on our show because he took a very brave stand on the floor of the House a couple of weeks ago where he basically changed his position on guns and said, you know, he came out in favor of common sense gun reform after having a very strong rating from the NRA and added himself as a sponsor to House Bill 411, which is sponsored by Atticus Scott and Reggie Meeks, two representatives from Louisville. So we wanted to talk to him a little bit about that. And then after that, we have Jeannie Smith, who is running for office in the state Senate in Bowling Green. So we've already talked to Chris Harris. I thought it went well.
Yeah, I did too.
Excited for you guys to hear that interview, and we will talk to Jeannie tomorrow. So we're actually recording this on Tuesday. Yeah, we'll know who wins the special election tomorrow.
Yep, that's true.
By the time you're listening. All right, with that, here is Chris Harris. Democratic Representative Chris Harris serves in the State House of Representatives on behalf of the residents of the 93rd District, which covers the furthest eastern part of the Commonwealth, Martin County and eastern Pike County. He served there since defeating incumbent Democrat W. Keith Hall in 2014 by 209 votes. And during his first reelection campaign in 2016, he defeated Republican challenger Norma Kirk McCormick by 395 votes. We invited Representative Harris to the show today because 2 weeks ago he gave a floor speech in which he spoke out in favor of common sense gun reforms. Representative Harris is a lawyer and a father to three children, one of whom is playing in the 15th Region Boys Basketball Tournament this week. So good luck to him. And Representative Harris, welcome to My Old Kentucky Podcast.
Great. Thanks for having me and great to be with you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much. During your speech a couple weeks ago, you spoke about how your confidence at home, they warned you about the risks of speaking out about the issue of guns. So since your speech a couple of weeks ago, what's the reaction been like back home in Pike and Martin counties?
Well, I will say, Robert, overall, the response has been overwhelmingly positive. 90-95% positive. There have been a few negative comments that you don't want to dwell on. But there are people that believe that under no circumstances should any rule or regulation be set forth that limits or restricts anybody's right to own any type of weapon. You know, I just don't share the same vision of what the future of our country needs to look like as those folks.
Right. Yeah, it was very interesting. So today I was just reading the news and I saw that in Pike County that the school board there had passed, or maybe not passed, but was considering a resolution to arm all the teachers, I guess. I'm not quite sure. I just read this in the news today. But that's something it raises a lot of strong emotions, especially in Eastern Kentucky. You know, but at the same time, the thing about your district out there in Eastern Kentucky is even though it went very strongly for President Trump as opposed to Hillary Clinton, even if you met five people there, one of them was going to be a supporter of Hillary Clinton. You know, it's not like everybody agrees on this issue. So can you talk to us a little bit about the intensity that you're feeling? Or do you feel like that more people are feeling strongly one way or the other based on this particular issue?
Yeah, Robert, when I sit down and talk to folks about this issue, particularly folks back home, at first people are very defensive and they say, we don't believe that the Second Amendment should be infringed in any way under any circumstance. That's our constitutional right to carry arms, and it shouldn't be infringed at all in any way. And then when you get in and you start talking to them about specific proposals to ban bump stocks, for instance, mm-hmm. Almost everyone that I spoke with agrees that bump stocks should not be available. You shouldn't be able to buy a device that turns a semi-automatic weapon into an automatic weapon when automatic weapons are banned to begin with.
Right.
When you sit down and you say, well, what about folks with mental illnesses? You think that folks that suffer from mental illness ought to be able to buy a gun? And the answer is always, no, they shouldn't be able to do that. There are many restrictions that people actually, I think, accept and would acknowledge if we would just do a better job of explaining to folks that we're not trying to take everybody's guns away. We're trying to save the lives of children and people in this country who are becoming increasingly more and more victims of mass shootings.
Right.
And this is, it's just a matter of time before this, you know, comes to a great school near you. And I don't want that on my shoulders that I didn't try to do anything about it. And I think they understand that.
That's kind of a common theme in politics over the past couple of years that, you know, when you talk about in generalities like Obamacare, for instance, or gun control, people tend to not like it. But once you get into the specifics of policy, sometimes people start to change their mind a little bit. Speaking a little bit about specific policies, after you gave your speech, you added your name as a co-sponsor to House Bill 411, which was already being sponsored by Representative Atticus Scott and Representative Reggie Meeks, who are both from Louisville. So the specifics of this bill are that it reverses the law which requires guns confiscated by police departments to be auctioned, which seems kind of crazy, but that's the law right now, that they have to be auctioned, and instead mandates that those guns be destroyed. And this bill seems pretty unobjectionable, but I don't know. Just based on my read of it, it doesn't even seem like it's going to get a hearing in the Judiciary Committee, much less actually pass through the committee or even pass the legislature. So this is a huge risk you're taking here. You're speaking out on an issue that's very politically charged, and it doesn't seem like there's much of a reward in sight. So talk to us a little bit about why you decided to take this big risk.
Well, the reward is, Robert, standing up for something that you believe in and trying to fix a problem that you see that exists. Mm-hmm. I said this in my speech. I don't leave my family, leave my job, leave my home, and come to Frankfort to try just to do things that are politically going to get me reelected. I think that's what's wrong with politics today and what's wrong with government and why government has such a poor reputation, or people are just so down on government right now, is because you just have so many people that are just doing things to try to get reelected instead of doing what's right and what needs to happen. So I feel strongly in it. To me, that's the reward, is knowing that I tried to fix something. And if it sends me home in November because I can't get reelected because I stood up for something that I believed in, then that's okay. I mean, I can live with that, and I'm willing to. I can't live with the thoughts of me not doing anything just to keep an NRA rating, mm-hmm. and then something like that happen at Bevins Grade School or Belfry Elementary School or Phelps Elementary School or Warfield Elementary, one of the schools in my district.
Right.
I just couldn't, I can't carry that.
Yeah, we speak to a lot of candidates on this show, and we've talked to a lot of them. We've asked them the question, you know, why are you running so hard to be in such a small minority caucus, which only currently has 38 members? And the most common refrain we've heard from people is, you know, they want to be able to speak truth to power. It seems like this is really a real-life example of that. You know, this is just truly someone standing up for what they believe in and trying to make a difference on an issue, even though it may be a little difficult in this environment right now, for sure.
Legislatively, yes, but starting the conversation and being able to have this conversation with folks back home in my district, there's value to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more that I'm able to have that conversation and the more that people talk about it, the more likely they are to start thinking through some of these positions and getting beyond that, you know, just absolute position that I should be able to own and possess any type of weapon that I want to possess, even if it's designed for war. You know, if these are weapons of war, there's people that believe that they are absolutely entitled to have any kind of weapon that they want at their home. And you know, we've got to have that conversation so that folks know that we can't keep going down this path, because it doesn't end in a good place.
No, it certainly does not. Speaking of that conversation, there's a couple of places that guns are an issue all the time. And Representative Atticus Scott and Representative Reggie Meeks, who are already sponsoring this bill, they've made several attempts at passing gun reform laws in the legislative sessions in the past. And they're both, you know, black legislators from urban districts in Louisville. So talk to us a little about what it was like to join this bill. You know, this is kind of an interesting pairing, the three of you, where it's definitely bridging this urban and rural divide that the Democratic caucus certainly exists within. Talk to us about what it's been like working with those two. And do you think that this might open up the opportunity for more different types of Democratic legislators to work together?
Well, I have a lot of respect for those two legislators. They, you know, they have filed these bills in the past that have not been met with such great acceptance, but they were singing this song well before I joined the chorus. And, you know, I've got a lot of respect for them and appreciation for what they have done. And it's good to be able to bridge that gap between rural and urban. And I think more and more that conversation is going to be had. There's a lot of things that our communities share in common. And, you know, when they look out their window, they don't see the same picture that I see when I look out my window. But some of the struggles that we face with health care and with poverty, we share those issues. So I think there are ways that we can work together. And when we can work together, whether you're Democrat or Republican, rural or urban, I think that anytime you have the opportunity to work with somebody else to bring about positive change, it's always a great idea.
Absolutely.
So your district, District 93, has been represented by a Democrat for a long time and used to be one of the most reliably Democratic parts of the state. But Mitch McConnell won the district in 2014 by 32%, and Donald Trump won the district by a whopping 68%. So you are facing the same opponent this cycle that you faced last time. She'll almost certainly make this a campaign issue, I would assume. And you said during your speech that you didn't run for office to get reelected, but, you know, you're clearly giving it a shot. So what are you doing to defend this position that you've taken?
I'm not the poster child for, you know, taking away people's guns. I mean, I own guns. I support the Second Amendment. But I do believe that there has to be reasonable limits. I believe that, and I'm willing to stand up and have that conversation or that debate with anybody that wants to have it. What am I doing to, you know, the campaign and to encourage people to vote for me? I'm supporting teachers and our public employees. You know, we've had public forums at home discuss the issues related to the pension crisis, and I have been very intimately involved in fighting off the proposals that have been set forth by the governor and by the Republican majority. We've been fighting for reforms at the Public Service Commission. You know, utility rates in eastern Kentucky are out of sight. It is not uncommon for people that live in very modest homes to get $700-$800 a month utility bills for electricity. That's got to change. People that live in my community are, for the most part, poor, and it's very difficult for them to pay those type of utility bills.
Sure.
And when they're choosing between electricity and food and medicine, and the corporate profits of AEP are going through the roof. They've doubled their stock price and they've doubled their dividends, and their CEO makes $11 million a year. Yet, you know, we've got people that are living in single wide mobile homes that are paying $600-$700 a month in electricity bills when they only draw, you know, $1,100. Mm-hmm. So something's got to give there. So yeah, we're doing a lot of things. I think I'm, representing the people that sent me to Frankfort as best I can. And I think for the most part, they're satisfied with that and they understand what I've been doing for them. Mm-hmm.
So you quoted the Bible several times during your speech. It seemed like your faith was a driving force behind taking the stance. Tell us about the connection between your faith and your work as a legislator, especially as it relates to your stance on common sense gun control.
My faith was not the guiding force behind taking the stance. I use my faith and the Bible as an example of how we need to address this and what we're doing wrong and just praying and not acting. But my faith was not the guiding force in pushing this. The guiding force in making this stand is trying to fix the problem that we're in. I mean, I'm elected to be a leader. And, you know, as a leader, you have to make change, and you should make change. And when you see a problem, you should step up to the plate and try to fix that problem. And so the guiding force behind the decisions that I made to make the speech and to change my position on guns was the sense of responsibility and duty to the people that sent me to Frankfort. They expect me to try to fix problems that we have in eastern Kentucky. And this is a problem that is, it's an existing problem that continues to get worse. Mm-hmm. And if I don't step up and say something and try to fix it, then I'm not much of a leader. So that was kind of the driving force behind me. I think our faith is personal. Everybody's faith is personal to them. And I get so tired of hearing politicians use their faith politically. Mm-hmm. But there are times when it is appropriate, and I feel that in this instance, it was appropriate.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us, Representative Harris. Thank you for taking this brave stand, and we certainly hope it comes to something in Frankfort this year, and if not, we certainly hope that you're still there in Frankfort to fight this fight into the future. So thank you so much for joining us.
Appreciate you guys having me on.
All right. Jeannie Smith is the Democratic candidate for State Senate District 32. The 32nd District is a single county district encompassing Warren County, which is the home of Bowling Green. Currently, the majority whip, Republican Mike Wilson, serves the 32nd District as senator. Ms. Smith, like most of the candidates we've spoken to, is an educator. She works at Drake's Creek Middle School in Bowling Green. Ms. Smith has been active in the Southern Kentucky chapter of Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, and this is her first time running for the state legislature. So, Ms. Smith, welcome to My Old Kentucky podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're so excited to speak to you. So when you made the decision to run for office, that had to be pretty harrowing. So you're already a teacher and a mom, and those are already really hard jobs, and you've added running for office to that list. And that's, you know, not exactly an easy step to take. So why did you decide to run for office this year?
Well, I'm running for state senate because I see the effects that poverty has on our children and our families every day. It shows up as fatigue or stress, anxiety, and more of our kids are coming to school burdened by this. And you're right, so I'm a teacher and I'm a mom, and that affects me personally. And so I know that we can do better, so I decided to run. It wasn't a decision I made lightly. I did, I guess in probably like January of 2017, I started developing this pit in my stomach. And I was realizing that I was being called to do this. And so, you know, a few months in, I told my husband, I said, I think that I need to run for office. And we just started that conversation. So in October, I announced that I was going to run for state senate.
That's amazing. If we had asked you like 5 years ago about the chances that you would run for office, what do you think you would have said?
Well, it's something that I have thought about. I thought about it as a child and sort of let it go out of my mind. But, you know, when I was a kid, I have this vivid memory. I guess I was a teenager and I was being punished for something unfairly, I'm sure. And I was being sent to my room. And on the way, I turned around and I said to my parents, well, I stand for justice. And you know, they told me, just keep walking. But I might be new to politics, but doing what's right and standing up for what's fair and what's just is not something that's new for me. So I'm ready to do this, and I'm going to take all of those values that I hold dear to Frankfort.
Well, that's awesome. That's really great to hear. And we definitely need more people standing for justice in Frankfort. I think that you, of all the people we've spoke to, you're already the fifth female educator that we've spoken to who's running for office this year. So what do you think it is that has caused so many women and so many educators to make the same decision that you have, running for office in the state legislature?
Well, you know the saying, if you aren't at the table, then you're on the menu.
Right.
And we're seeing women and educators on the chopping block right now. We're severely underrepresented in Frankfort. When I looked at the demographics of our legislators, it was pretty shocking to me. So there are only about 5% of all the legislators identify themselves as educators. Mm-hmm. And there's only 4 women currently in the Senate. That's like 10%.
Yeah.
So we have got to get more women and more educators in there so that that experience comes to the table. We've seen just bad legislation, pension being one of those examples. But we know what it takes for our families and our communities to thrive, and women will push up their sleeves and make it happen.
Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of women, the Emerge program is something that we've talked to several people on our show about in the past. We have several alumni who've spoken about that program, who've been on our show. But I think you're actually the first person that we've talked to from the 2018 class. You're actually running for office at the same time you're going through the Emerge program. So talk to us about what it's like. Is there anything that you've learned in the middle of doing this program that you'd have wished you'd have known before? And kind of what's it like even adding that to your plate in addition to all the other things that you're doing?
Well, Emerge is an incredible program. It is equipping women with exactly what they need to run and to feel confident that they can run. So I think Emerge Kentucky is doing an amazing job. They have a great win rate. So I'm very excited to add to that this fall. Being in Emerge while I'm running and teaching and parenting is exhausting. It really is. And there's no way around that. It's just tired. You know, it's tiring. But the benefit that comes with it is worth it. I am learning new things all the time. I have more resources and people that I can ask questions to get information that is about politics or just how to go about finding the right answers or the, just the resources that we need to be able to run an effective campaign. Emerge is providing those tools for us. So the other thing that I love about it is that we are creating this sisterhood. All of these different things that are on my plate, they're on my friend Josie Raymond's plate too, and Dana Beasley Brown. They are, all of these women are already leaders in their community. They're already doing amazing things. They, a lot of them have children. We can look at each other and know in a second exactly how the other person's feeling. And it really is that sisterhood that helps push us through and is going to, you know, just provide the support that we need to be successful. You know, there have been some incredible women who have championed the way, but, you know, we're doing it too. And so that's not always an easy task.
Absolutely. No, it's not an easy task. And I mean, just speaking for me, I'm super excited to see so many great women that are running for office this year. And I'm really excited to see more even in the future.
Yeah.
So the last time that I looked, your campaign raised money from 154 different contributors with an average campaign contribution of about $25. So tell us, yeah, which is pretty wild. So what have you done to activate people during this campaign and how have you been actually able to motivate them to not just like do anything, not just to like go out and knock doors or call people, but actually to give you money?
Well, the people of Warren County are good people, and we understand that when my neighbor does better, we all do better. So our schools need to be successful so that our city will thrive. That's our message, and folks understand that, and they want to get behind it and support it. One of the most important ways that they can do that is by donating. So we need you to vote. We need you to canvass with me and knock the doors. But we also need you to financially support us. And, you know, I am asking everyone I know if they will contribute to our campaign. And I'm calling it our campaign because that's what it is. Those numbers just make me really proud that we have had so many people contributing, teachers, retirees, workers, just moms, everybody is wanting to be a part of this. And that's really exciting.
Absolutely. It's absolutely incredible to look at the numbers and the number of contributors that you have and just kind of how different people have gotten engaged. And while you talked a little bit about having to ask everybody because you need lots of money. And that's true because you're running against somebody in leadership. So, you know, Senator Wilson, he's raised a lot of money in large part thanks to PAC money. So I think when I looked it up, he's raised like $2,000 from Marathon Oil, their PAC, and $1,000 each from gas industry PACs, the cable company PACs, automotive industry PACs, and a couple of actually some super PAC money too. So, you know, he's got a lot of money and he's going to be using it for sure. So what are you doing to make sure that his money advantage doesn't like overwhelm you?
Well, this is not a new problem. This summer, I attended a training session for candidates, and one representative who was defeated in 2016 actually shared that her opposition had $600,000 dumped into his campaign in the final months. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's dark money that's coming from outside of the state influencing our elections. But the candidate who was sitting next to me simply whispered, "Well, how do we beat that?" And I turned to him and just said, "With people power, that's what it takes." And our fundraising shows this. We will not be overwhelmed because we are working for something here. The people of Warren County are committed and supportive of our campaign. And we've got to remember, dollars can't vote, but people can. And you better believe we are going to turn out the vote in November.
That's a really great answer. That's, you know, that's exactly how you win. You get people to vote for you. And that's, you know, that's literally the only way to win. Money cannot vote. So.
Yeah, that's right.
So speaking of Warren County, where you're running, so it used to be a very Democratic place, but the county hasn't actually voted for a Democrat in an election on a countywide basis since Steve Beshear won in 2011. However, there's still a very significant portion of strong progressives in the county. You know, that's where Western Kentucky University is, and you know, it's a pretty decent sized city. So what's your strategy for activating the folks in Warren County who would be your supporters and for winning over the rest of Warren County this fall?
Well, we have to remember, so we may not as a county have voted for a Democrat for a while, but we have had some great Democratic representatives like Representative Jody Richards mm-hmm. and Representative Wilson Stone. So you're right, we do have this root here that is growing. And what we're seeing is that, you know, people are ready for this. It's like I mentioned before, we have a strong message that we are ready to invest in our community, to work together, to build the Kentucky that we want. And people are getting behind that message. And I think that that's what's important, that we have to stay true to our message of strengthening schools, respecting teachers through keeping our promise of a good pension. And when it boils down to it, who doesn't want these good things for Kentucky? We are finally, you know, we are presenting a vision of what we could have. We are creative enough. We are innovative enough and smart enough to do this. And people want a strong Kentucky. People want to have a thriving community, and they're ready to work for it. So I think that, you know, staying true to that message. And then the other part of it is that people need to be listened to. We've just had this town hall type meeting here that the newspaper actually put together. And you could tell that people felt like finally they could speak and be listened to. People are wanting to be heard, and I'm ready to listen to them and hear what the needs are of our community.
Yeah, you know, it's the House of Representatives, and it doesn't mean much if you're not actually representing people. So that sounds like,
right.
Yeah, that's what you want to be doing for sure. So this year in Frankfort, fiscal issues have dominated the discussion. We now have a pension bill, and I think I don't know what it's doing. It actually was in committee today, but I think it got pulled, and there's going to be a new one. So I still don't really know what's going on there. And the budget is due before the end of the session, and they've started talking about that today as well in Frankfort. So the governor and the Republicans who control the legislature, they seem to think that the best way to fund our budget is to cut stuff. If you made it to Frankfort, what case would you make about how Kentucky should deal with its budgetary issues?
Well, the budget has got to be addressed. We haven't made major changes to our tax system since before the internet, and that's crazy. And so it is time that we tackle this problem. You know, I would say that we can't cut our way to prosperity. It's not what business people do. It's not how people invest in their future. You don't cut, you invest. That's what I think needs to happen. And it's important for us to realize that it's not all about increasing taxes, because that's, you know, what people are most afraid of. Right now, as a state, we give away nearly $14 billion in corporate tax breaks and special interest. It's time to get some of that money back so that it's working for all of us. There's some ways that we can do that are very reasonable and I think should be supported regardless of your party. So I'll give you an example. If we give a tax break to a corporation that wants to come here and start a business, we can put a clause in there so that after 5 or 10 years, we review that tax break and the promises that that company has made, and we make sure they're following through on that. Mm-hmm. And if they're not, then we make sure that that tax break gets reduced mm-hmm. so that we're getting that money back, because we can't let corporations continue to exploit our tax system and not have any accountability.
Absolutely not. Yeah, that seems like a pretty straightforward way to go about doing it, and it seems like the Democrats are certainly getting behind that as a party, so that's really good, and I hope that it gets addressed in future sessions of the legislature. So you're a teacher, we've talked about, and I think you're the first middle school teacher that we've talked to. I think now that makes like every level of education. We've talked to higher education, elementary school, high school, and now middle school, so there you go.
Yes.
So as a teacher, you know, the pension bill actually directly impacts you. There was this pension bill that went before the legislature in the fall of this year when we thought there might be a special session. And then now in the regular session, there have been some changes made to it. Do you think that the changes that the Republicans have made since the fall are good enough? Do you think that this is a bill that you think teachers are going to like, or that you like as a teacher?
The new pension bill is still atrocious. It is bad in so many ways. So as a teacher, I'm paying very close attention to this because you're right. It affects me personally and my family and how I am preparing for the future. Teachers should be concerned and state workers should be concerned because there's just so many ways that it's still going to hurt us. And we have to remember that there is a greater good here. These are public servants. And I don't want us to forget that. These are people who have committed to doing a job for the good of all of us. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, usually, they're taking their salary is not that big. The guarantee of a pension at the end of your service helps you to get through and to make those cuts for your family and to make sure that you're, you know, living modestly so that you can have this retirement. And it's a modest retirement. Let's not forget that either, despite what some people might be saying.
It's a fixed income as well. I mean, it's what you get. Yeah,
absolutely. I think that this bill that was proposed, and I didn't hear that they had taken it off, so I'm not sure about that. But this bill that they've proposed, it hurts women disproportionately. If you can't buy back your unpaid leave that you've taken for maternity leave, then that hurts women way more than men. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we know that in education, we have significantly higher numbers of women. And, you know, I think this is something that we really need to think hard about. There are teachers that literally will not be able to stay in this profession that they love. And it's not because they're selfish, but it's because they know they have to make sure they can provide for themselves in retirement. It's going to be really unfortunate for us to lose so many good teachers and employees simply because our state's not willing to do what it needs to do to keep them.
That's an amazing answer, yeah. And I think that that's right on in terms of the pension bill. And I mean, it's important for people to consider all of those facts, like the disproportionate impact on women. And it's important for people to make that case because I think, you know, when people hear, oh, they get to use their sick days, they don't really understand what that means or what being able to buy back your maternity leave means. So thank you for making the case and actually speaking out about this sort of thing. We have been asking everybody this question, and Jasmine is not here to stop me, so I'm going to ask it. So, you're actually running for Senate, so you can't serve as a co-sponsor, but would you be willing, if it makes it to the Senate, to support House Bill 29, which is the tax reform bill that's been sponsored by Jim Wayne, George Brown Jr., Tom Birch, Jeff Donahue, Kelly Flood, Derek Graham, Joni Jenkins, Mary Lou Marzian, Reggie Meeks, Daryl Owens, Ruth Ann Palumbo, and Attica Scott?
Now, I have heard you ask this question over and over and over again, and I'm going to give you a slightly different answer. I know most people just say yes, but I want to make one thing clear. I think that this is a really great bill. I think that it is a huge step in the right direction as far as tax reform. There's one thing in it that I am slightly concerned about, and it has to do with what we were just talking about, pension. Mm-hmm. There is something where in the bill, it will tax, so right now, if you make $41,000 in Kentucky in retirement income, that's untaxed. That right. First $41,000 is untaxed. And they've reduced that in the bill, I believe, to $36,000. So my mom's a retired teacher, and she literally lives on $40,000 a year. And I know what that means because I help her with her finances, and she is just making it. What she brings in every month is what she spends on her bills. You know, she has to save up for hearing aids. If she has a medical expense, you know, that is more complicated and might have to go on a payment plan. So I would maybe see about raising that to $50,000 or $60,000 instead of that 41 being reduced to 36,000. But you know, aside from that, it's like I said, I think this bill is excellent, and I would want to support something like this, especially if we could make that possible change.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the goal of the bill is to kind of shift the way that we think about taxes in the state, and instead of having people at the lower and middle ends of our income distribution pay more of a percentage of their income in taxes, we want to have that be more even and maybe even a little bit more on the people who make more money. So yeah, it would make sense that the response that we would have be less about people on the lower end paying more in taxes. So that makes sense to me.
Right.
That change absolutely makes sense to me. So, all right. Yeah.
Well, and you're right that, you know, right now the way that our tax structure is created is that the burden of taxes is falling on the middle class and the poor.
Exactly.
And we're paying a larger share of our income towards tax than those in the very top bracket, significantly more, in fact. So we definitely have some work to do here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, we need more people who are smart about these issues and who have more experience dealing with people who make, you know, $40,000 writing legislation. So it'd be good to get more people like that to do that. So I hope you are able to do that next year with all the other people that we just listed. So we don't want fiscal issues to be like dominating everything. I mean, that's kind of what's been on the table this year because the Republicans are in charge. But, you know, there's a lot of other issues to focus on. So talk to us a little bit about what motivated you to run. What were some other things that really motivate you, that get you really hoping that you're going to be able to be in the legislature next year?
There's a lot of things that I'm very passionate about. When I am elected, I hope that I can help to expand voting rights. We have hundreds of thousands of Kentuckians that aren't able to vote, and we need to work to change our laws so that they're more fair. These are people who, you know, deserve the right to vote, and we need to make sure that they can do that. I applaud Secretary Grimes for doing the online voter registration. I think we need to look as a state at what we can do so that more people can make it to the ballot and vote. I'll be in office after the census is taken, and we'll be redrawing district lines. Gerrymandering is a terrible thing that it's a discriminatory process that changes who gets elected. And so I want to make sure that when we are redrawing those lines, we're doing it in a way that's fair so that people of color are being represented the way that they should be. So those are a couple things that, you know, I'll be excited to work on when I'm elected. But, you know, there's another thing that's very personal to me, that when I have two boys, and with both of them, I had a health condition that arose during pregnancy. And it's sort of a fluke thing. It doesn't happen to very many people, but it increases your chances of delivering a stillborn child. And you can have a completely healthy pregnancy, and then in the last 3 weeks that your full term is when the baby dies. And if it had not been for really good prenatal care, we might not be celebrating birthdays in my family. Mm. That's real. You know, being able to go to the doctor is extremely important to me. And I want to make sure that every Kentuckian can go to the doctor or buy the medicine that they need. We saw with Connect, which was expanded Medicaid, we saw that health outcomes were dramatically improving just within the 3 years that we had this great program. I want to work really hard to make sure that Kentuckians have the health care that they need. I see the effects that this has in the classroom, you know, kids missing school because they're sick, they're not getting the care that they need, medication is expensive, so kids are on medication and off medication and then on. You know, there's some real problems that come with not being able to get the care that people need. So that's something that I would really want to work towards. I think it's just really important, and Kentucky needs it. So let's do it.
Protecting the gains that we made under the Affordable Care Act and extending them further to other people who might have been missed by that system. So, yeah, those are really great issues,
yeah.
And we need more people to champion those types of things once you get to Frankfurt. So, speaking of voting rights, gosh, we had the special election yesterday, and it's always just blows my mind that the polls close in Kentucky at 6 p.m. I mean, most people aren't even off work at that point. So it's just kind of crazy to think about. We want people to be able to vote. We need to have those polls open later than that. So good luck in your election. These are really great answers. And, you know, you seem like the type of person that could really represent Warren County in a great way and would be a wonderful representative for those people in Frankfurt. So best of luck to you. And thank you so much for coming on to my Old Kentucky podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I loved it.
All right. Thank you so much. Jasmine, how can people find out about us?
They can find us on Twitter at @myoldkypod. We have a Facebook page that you can like. You can find our show notes on Medium and our podcast on the podcast app of your choice.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.